This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the spring of 2002, President Bush spoke at the graduation at the United States Military Academy, the 200th class to graduate from West Point, which had long since been tagged with a nickname.
West Point is guided by tradition. And in honor of the golden children of the Corps, I will observe one of the traditions you cherish most as the Commander-in-Chief. I hereby grant amnesty to all cadets who are on restriction for minor conduct offenses.
The golden children, their parents, and their families then heard one of the most important speeches of George W. Bush's presidency, where he laid out the policy of preemption. Few who listened could doubt that these young men and women would soon go to war.
You graduate from this academy in a time of war, taking your place in an American military that is powerful and is honorable. Our war on terror is only begun.
Bill Murphy, Jr. tells the story of the West Point class of 2002 in a new book, In Time of War. He was Bob Woodward's research assistant, also covered the war in Iraq for the Washington Post. He joins us in just a moment. Later this hour, Arielle Levy of The New Yorker and her profile of Cindy McCain. But first, if you are or were in the armed forces, how did September the 11th change your life? Tell us your story. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Bill Murphy, Jr. joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I don't think any of us listening today were ready for what happened on September the 11th. Was West Point, the college that trains the Army's leaders, the school that envisions itself as the greatest leadership school in the world, was West Point ready for September the 11th?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think West Point has been asking itself that question for quite some time. I suppose the answer is that they were as ready as they could have been, given the state of the Army, in 2001, when the cadets that I wrote about went to West Point when they went there as freshmen or plebes. It was the summer of 1998, and at that time, a hardship tour in the Army, if you said that phrase to someone, they might think a year in Korea, six or nine months in Bosnia. And obviously, by the time that they graduated, it was a radically different story.
You tell this story through the very personal lives of some of that graduating class, including Todd Bryant, that we heard a bit about him in the introduction to the program, and Drew Sloan, who we'll be talking with just a moment. But tell us about this graduating class as they entered West Point, as you suggested, and thinking they would be starting careers in a peacetime Army.
I think that's true. I think actually, we had a generation of soldiers, since the time of Vietnam, who came out of West Point and were prepared, sort of coiled like springs, if you will, to go out in the Army and do what they've been training for 4 or more years when you consider their other training as well. And the irony, I suppose, is that for going back to the early 1970s, class after class graduated. But on that day of graduation, the country was never in conflict. That's not to say we didn't have small wars, the Persian Gulf War, Grenada, et cetera. But these were the first ones. And of course, there's a long gray line behind them as well. This is just the first of many classes that have graduated into this conflict. But these were the first ones. And I thought it would be really interesting to see if I could follow them for the full 5 years that they were committed to serve in the Army and just find out exactly, like you said, how did 9/11, which happened, of course, at the start of their senior year at West Point, how did it truly affect their lives and the lives of the people who loved them?
And the lives of the people who loved them. Well, also with us here in Studio 3A is Jen Bryant, the widow of Todd Bryant, who, of course, as we mentioned, graduated in that class. It's very good of you to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And you were there listening to that speech.
The graduation speech, yes. I was sitting in the stands, and I remember those exact words, in a time of war, and thinking to myself, this is going to define not only Todd's career, but probably our lives.
There was a cocoon that that Bill Murphy, Jr. describes, the world of West Point of marches and formal dinners and dressed uniforms. And was there a realization at that moment that this world was about to change substantially?
Of course there was. His brother and sister, my husband's brother and sister, were already serving overseas at that time, and you're hearing reports of you know, that a war was going to be starting, that some kind of, that we were going to take the war to the enemy, as he said. And so that's when I realized that it wouldn't be the glamorous life that he led me to believe of traveling to Germany and Italy and places such as that, but really having to deal with, you know, him serving in a war, in a conflict, and worrying about him and all of that.
Bill Murphy, there is also the sense that these men were trained for this. They were eager, as you describe it, to find out what it would be like to lead men in battle.
I think that's true. I don't want to go too far with that. I never really sensed any, you know, bloodlust or anything like that.
I'm not talking about that.
I understand. I think it's imagine someone who went to medical school and graduated and they want to get into surgery, or someone who goes to law school and they want to get in the courtroom. I think, you know, people who graduate from West Point by and large are there because they want to serve as officers in the U.S. Army at least for 5 years. And they were eager, certainly early on. I think there was some concern that the war might be over before they actually got to join it.
Jen, was Todd worried the war would be over before he'd get there?
There was definitely a sense of that, especially because his older brother and sister were serving over there, so he didn't want to be left out, so to speak. But at the same time, he knew just how huge it could be, and so it's, no one ever really wants to go into combat, but you do want to fulfill your duty of serving your country, putting to use the skills that he learned to be a leader at West Point.
And I have to ask you, was it easy, did you ever have the conversation about what would happen if he got hurt or killed, and was it easy to have that conversation?
That's never an easy conversation to have. It's not one that he would want to have, of course. He loved life and didn't want to think about that possibly happening. And of course, neither did I. And even with the possibility of it happening, you never truly believe that it could happen. But we put the conversation off several times and first just dealt with the practicality of it, of, you know, the bills or his will or whatever else. And the night before he left was when we finally got into, well, if something does happen to me, here's how I want you to live your life, or here's where I want you to bury me, or those kinds of things.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Our guests again are Bill Murphy, Jr. He's the author of the new book, In Time of War, The Proud and Perilous Journey of West Point's Class of 2002, and Jen Bryant, the widow of Todd Bryant, who was a member of that class. And let's begin with James, and James is with us from Seattle in Washington. James, are you there? James is apparently... Oh, James, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
I agree totally on the point, like she was saying. You know, I totally agree with her and everything. It's, you know, like the West Point grads were waiting to go to war. And, you know, you just never know when your number's called. We're just a bunch of numbers, basically, in the military. But that's what so-called said. But, you know, you're trained and you're ready. And some people, it's unfortunate when they're in the service, they don't get that time to do battle or do a humanitarian relief mission, you know, and it's like they want to do it, they're eager to do it, and they never get that chance.
What about you?
I did a couple of them, yeah. I got the chance to do a couple of humanitarian relief missions, like the Philippine evacuee, the Gulf War. I mean, you know, I had a brother pass away in a hunting accident before I left, and I dedicated my service time to him and God, you know, and, you know, I pray to God every day. That's what our country's about, you know. It's like, you know, you're trained in something. You want to basically do that right away. You're anxious to do it. Sometimes you don't get the opportunity to ever do it. That's a real downfall for a serviceman or for a lawyer or a doctor. I know exactly what they're talking about, and I can relate to them.
Well, you said you were in the Gulf War. Were you still in the service at 9/11?
No, I was actually in break of service. I went back and joined the National Guard and became a 91 Bravo, which is considered a combat medic. And I volunteered, and I don't know if it had anything to do with my age being older, but I basically said, I'll go to Iraq. I volunteered myself. I wanted to go so bad, you know, because I had that taste in my mouth, you know, to go help people. And, you know, I have a big heart. That's what I'm about. And I never got to go to Iraq. You know, I went to Saudi Arabia, but in the Gulf War, but I never had the chance to actually go and fight. So I lost my opportunity, unfortunately. I wish I would have, because I got, you know, a lot of my friends say I got the Audie Murphy syndrome. You know, I'm
sure,
all about defending my country and my people. That's how I look at things in that perspective.
James, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Tom, and Tom's with us from Baltimore in Maryland.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I'm, I was in the active army for 5 years and got out right before September 11th and joined the National Guard. And through a couple deployments that I missed, I finally got called up through the backdoor draft and served a 22-month deployment, 10 months of training, and then 1 year in Iraq as a UAV pilot. And how it changed my life, well, it was I got married to my wife 4 days before I got deployed, and so we spent the first 2 years of our marriage separated, and that was pretty hard. But the surprising thing is, even though I had protested the war and I was against it completely, coming through the crucible of going to fight for my country actually led me to have an increased patriotism, an increased love of my country, to know that I loved it so much that I would still go and do this, even for a cause that I didn't think was just.
UAV, you were flying drones from where, Bakuba?
From Bakuba, primarily, but we also moved down into the Sunni Triangle, out east, closer to Iran, and we jumped around a lot.
Yeah. And Jen, I'm sure you can identify with that first 2 years of marriage being pretty much separated.
Oh, of course. Todd shipped out 9 days after our real wedding, so it was a complete whirlwind. The day after our wedding, I drove him down to the Philadelphia airport, and we said goodbye, and I saw him 2 days later when I made my way back to Kansas. So being separated so soon afterwards, not even having a honeymoon or even a few nights just to absorb it all, was very difficult.
Yeah. Tom, how's it been going since you got back?
Well, it's been going pretty well. I've had some depression and alcohol abuse issues because, you know, it took a lot out of me. But things are going a lot better now. I'm actually staying home with my twin girls and finishing up my school right now. So
I guess you got over that separation thing. Congratulations on the children, Tom.
Thank you.
And good luck to you. Stay
lot,
with us. We're talking about the men and women of the West Point class of 2002, the first to graduate after 9/11. We'll take more of your calls as well. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In his new book, In Time of War, Bill Miller Jr. tells the story as of the 2002 graduating class at West Point. When they started at the academy, the Army's biggest challenge was to identify possible threats. Then came 9/11, and many in the class of 2002 went on to serve on the front lines in Iraq and Afghanistan as junior officers. We'll talk with a member of that class in just a moment. If you are or were in the armed forces, how did September the 11th change your life? Call and tell us your story, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Bill Murphy Jr. is with us. There's an excerpt from his book, In Time of War, The Proud and Perilous Journey of West Point's Class of 2002, on our website at npr.org. Also with us, Jen Bryant, her husband Todd Bryant, a member of that class. He was killed in action in October of the following year. And let's see if we can get another call on the line. And this is Maui. Maui, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Calling from Chicago.
Yep. My call is for Jen, and I almost apologize for asking this question just because I hope it's not a painful question. But I would imagine in your situation, when you saw some of the reasons for the war question, all those kind of things, different thoughts might have been going through your head. Can you explain maybe a little bit what you were thinking or how it impacted you to have the war question, given that your husband gave his life in the struggle?
Well, of course it makes you question quite a few things, because one of the arguments people bring up was that we're over there for no reason, or, you know, for reasons that aren't good, and you want to think to yourself that your husband's life meant something, that he died for a reason, that it wasn't in vain or it wasn't for someone else's agenda. And so that definitely bothered me, because I didn't want to have his sacrifice lessened by their sometimes ignorant comments or, you know, not well thought out. And how I deal with that is just by realizing that he signed up to serve his country because he believed in something bigger than himself. And his favorite thing was to quote Voltaire and the, "I may not agree with you, but I will defend with my life your right to say what you're saying." And that was his ideal. So that's what I had to keep in mind.
Bill Murphy, you should also explain that he came from a military family. As we mentioned, his two older siblings were already in the war.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Both of Todd's parents were Air Force officers, and his older brother is still a Marine officer, and his older sister preceded him by 2 years at West Point. And she, you know, within, you know, that time period we're talking about, his brother served in Iraq and his sister served in Afghanistan. So it's definitely, he definitely came from a military family, a family with a lot of tradition.
Maury, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Jen.
Joining us now is Drew Sloan. He's a graduate of West Point's class of 2002 and a former Army captain. He's one of the men Bill Murphy writes about in his new book, In Time of War. He's with us from our bureau in New York. And nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Neil.
And you did not come from a military family.
No, absolutely not. I had grandparents who were in the Army during World War II, but aside from that, there was really absolutely no military background. My mom was a high school teacher, and my father was a college professor.
And not necessarily when your time came to go to the war, they were not necessarily supportive of your decision. Not supportive, but questions to some degree your decision to go to West Point and then question the war afterwards.
Well, that's partially true. My parents were always completely supportive of me doing what I wanted to do. And I think early on, I wanted to go to West Point starting in ninth grade. And early on, they realized this was something that I was actually serious about, much to their disbelief. They were worried, I think, about the war. But at that point in time, when I was going to West Point, I'm sorry, not about the war, but about West Point. Mm-hmm. When I was going there, you know, there was really nothing to worry about. As Bill mentioned, you may have been looking at a tour in Bosnia, maybe Kosovo, but really there was no concern.
And of course, that changed just as your senior year was beginning. And as you thought about what you were going to end up doing, did it change your perspective?
No. Yes and no. I knew probably about junior year after a summer experience at West Point that I was going to be an infantry officer. Mm-hmm. And knowing, you know, what the infantry does, that when the war in Afghanistan broke out and then subsequently the Iraq war, I knew what, you know, what I was getting. As much as anyone can know what they're getting into, I knew what I was getting into. And it didn't change it. I'd say it kind of hardened my resolve and made me very, very proud of what I was doing.
We asked Bill earlier whether West Point was ready for what happened after 9/11. Do you think that you were properly trained for what you were going to go into?
Well, what West Point does is not necessarily train you in technical military skills. They train you in sort of leadership traits and the idea that you will pick up the rest along the way. And I would say once I got through 4 years of West Point and then moved on to infantry officer basic course and particularly Ranger School, I felt I had a fairly good idea that I was as trained as a lieutenant in the infantry should be. I would say that on a whole, the Army wasn't necessarily ready for what it was getting into. In Afghanistan in particular, Afghanistan wasn't Iraq, and it was half humanitarian. It wasn't Iraq, and it wasn't Bosnia. It was kind of a hybrid between the two. And as such, the training that we did in my unit in Hawaii was kind of a mixed hybrid between the two as well.
It's still got to be a really scary occasion the first day you take over a platoon, though.
It is. It is. In fact, I basically showed up to Hawaii, walked in to see my company commander, and he said, "All right, good. We're going to the Makua training area out in on Oahu." And I met my platoon pretty much in the field, and had to lead them through a kind of a react to contact type drill on the first day. It's a bit intimidating.
In a way, they're training you.
In every way, they're training you.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Let's see if we can go now to Tony. Tony's with us from San Jose in California.
Yes. This is Tony. Hello.
Hi.
I would like to first offer my condolences to Mrs. Bryant. Thank you for your service.
Thank
Too many
you.
People don't remember that the spouses are the ones, you know, taking care of the family behind. So many thanks to you, ma'am.
I appreciate that.
Hello?
Tony, go ahead.
Well, basically, on 9/11, I was in boots, as you say, down in Monterey at the Defense Language Institute, one of the best language learning facilities in the world. I enlisted August of 2000, and I was sent to language school for Korean, of all languages. This was, you know, in 2000 when we thought Bosnia and North Korea were some of the hot spots. And I remember going to formation on the morning of September 11th, and my first sergeant saying to us, all of us in formation, we're at war. You know, this may not be fully announced. It may not be formalized, but, hug your family, take care of your finances, and start training hard because there's something down the road.
I guess that Korean didn't come in too handy.
Not in Iraq, which I just came back from in February.
And so how long were you there?
I was there for almost a year.
So this has really changed the course of your entire life these last 7 years.
I would say so.
And what was the experience like?
It wasn't a cakewalk, I can tell you that. I was enlisted, so perhaps I was different from the previous caller. But in all the ways that, you know, war informs your experiences, it was definitely different from the way the media portrayed it. But at the same time, you know, Iraqis are the same as us. And whatever training West Pointers get and whatever training the military gets, it's always a work in progress.
And you're still in the service?
I am. And my unit, based in Moffett Field, actually, just shipped to Iraq for training last week. And because I just came back, I didn't have to go with them. But it's likely that we'll probably go somewhere else in the next few years.
Tony, I can't tell you how much we wish you the best of luck.
Well, good luck to you, too.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Let's go now to Crystal. Crystal's with us from Paducah, Kentucky.
Hi, yes. I guess my comments are that I come from the generation that enlisted in the Army right before 9/11 in 1999 and 2000 and early 2001. I was engaged to a gentleman who was an MP when 9/11 happened, and everything kind of changed that day. Our outlooks on life changed. You know, the reason you signed up for the military was suddenly irrelevant. It didn't matter if you signed up for the benefits or the GI Bill or anything like that. It didn't matter. What mattered now was that you had to serve your country, and chances are, you know, something was coming down the line, and you're going to be asked to serve in a combat zone, and it was a very, scary time for all of us. A lot changed that day.
What happened to you?
Our relationship kind of fell apart after that. Suddenly it wasn't, you know, our planned life of, you know, being stationed in Texas and starting a family, that all kind of changed, and suddenly we didn't know what our plans were or where we would be or what was going to happen, and things kind of fell apart. You know, he went his way, and he's still active duty. He's been in Iraq a couple of times. You know, I kind of went my own way, and I was propelled into politics because of it. You know, I wanted to make sure that my voice was heard and I made a difference and that this wasn't allowed to happen again.
Bill Murphy, a lot of the people you write about went through very similar experiences.
They did. And, you know, it's a humbling experience to have written this book because there's story after story after story like this. And, you know, one of the hardest things was to recognize that as a writer with a responsibility to a reader, you can't possibly tell all the stories. It's just this litany of heroism and heartbreak that's just over and over. And, you know, I'd like to say thank you to all the callers that have called in that have served and welcome home. But I also hope that people understand that, you know, the West Point class of 02 was historical and important. But I hope that the larger thing that the book will do is to maybe in some small way kind of bridge the gulf between those of us who aren't in the military and don't have friends and family in the military and those who have, you know, devoted everything to the military over the past several years. I hope people will get to know people like Jen and the others that are, and Drew, of course, and others who are profiled in the book, and maybe just come to understand a little more about the rhythms of Army life and, you know, the burden some of these people have borne and how well they have borne them.
And Drew, Crystal said she's inclined towards politics now, and I understand you might be too.
To one degree or the other. Right now, I throw my support behind Barack Obama and doing some work for his campaign and others like Representative Murphy in Philadelphia. That we're at that stage at this point.
And what are you doing now, just so listeners know?
I am a dual degree at the Harvard Business School and the Harvard Kennedy School. And this summer worked for Dr. Amory Lovins out at Rocky Mountain Institute, kind of dealing with some energy security issues, some centered on how the military can actually use energy efficiency to improve their endurance capabilities and their ability to be more resilient against an energy attack.
And I can't help but think that your education at West Point, your experience in the Army, do so much to inform that.
It does. It's been very... It's funny. The military doesn't necessarily leave you, as I mentioned earlier, with a lot of technical skills. The infantry certainly doesn't. There's not a lot of use for being able to set in an ambush in business school. But what it does do is it gives you a sense of kind of the vastness of the world and you know how cultures interact and how people interact and how important those interactions really are. And I feel that's really what the military gave me was a sense that you know that the your initial way of thinking about how to do something might not necessarily be the best way given the context of the situation.
Crystal, thank you very much for your call, and good luck to you in your political career, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking about Bill Murphy Jr.'s new book, In a Time of War, The Proud and Perilous Journey of West Point's Class of 2002. We're talking with a member of that class, also Drew Sloan, and with Jen Bryant, the widow of Todd Bryant, who was in that class. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jen, I just wanted to pick up on what Bill was talking about a moment ago. Sacrifice. A lot of people in the military, a lot of military families call and tell us they feel that they have been asked to shoulder this amazing burden without the rest of the country being asked to make the same kinds of sacrifices.
No, they're not necessarily asked to make the same kinds of sacrifices, but what is important to us is their support, is understanding that, like the other caller was saying, you don't necessarily sign up just to serve your country or to serve in a time of war, but you serve for some greater purpose. And that's what my husband did. That's what so many of the West Point class 2002 did, was because they wanted to serve their country. And as far as me shouldering a burden or any part of that, it's, you know, when I decided to marry him, I knew that that was going to be my life and that that was a possibility. And even though they don't make the same kinds of sacrifices, just having that support is very important to us.
Here's an email we got from Greg in Arizona. As a young man just graduating from high school, I worked for Carl Koch Construction, making the floors for the World Trade Center, collapse of which may have been the cause of the towers falling. When the towers were hit by the aircraft, I was working with a launch crew on a USAF EC-130. I was totally shocked when the aircraft crew chief told us what had happened. We didn't believe him at first, but when he came back and told us the second tower had been hit, I wanted to cry or yell or something. A month later, I was in West Asia supporting Operation Enduring Freedom. And let's get one last caller on the line. This is Mike, and Mike's with us from Goldsboro in North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm currently serving in the Air Force, and I heard Crystal's talk about the different generations and how she's from the pre-9/11 generation. I'm kind of from the immediately post-9/11 generation. When 9/11 happened, I was 19, and, you know, like most 19-year-olds, thought myself to be invulnerable and not really thinking about anything outside my own little world. And when it happened, it just made me feel something inside that, you know, I didn't know existed. And so I stewed over for a little bit, and I ended up going to the recruiter and talking to him. Plus, I was raised by a single mom and hadn't got a lot of benefits from the government, so I felt I should give something back. And now, like speaking of the generations again, we have a new generation coming in now that I'm seeing in our young troops that were in elementary school when 9/11 happened. So
hard to believe, isn't it?
Connection.
Doesn't it make you feel old, Mike?
Kind of. And so just different how the different generations went. Some people had joined for different reasons, and I joined as kind of a response to 9/11. And now these new guys don't really, they know about the war, but they don't see the connection between 9/11 and the wars going on.
Yet they are there to serve their country too.
Yes.
And they've joined at a time when they know that things are not as going to be easy.
Yes, and it's just interesting how different things are happening like that. They just don't have the same kind of, kind of like how they're saying the Americans aren't seeing the same mm-hmm. burden that we have. They kind of were not really seeing what was going on and how it progressed.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike, thanks very much, and good luck to you. You still in the Air Force?
Yes.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a couple of more calls, if you don't mind, after the break with Bill Murphy, Jr. He's the author of the new book, In a Time of War, The Proud and Perilous Journey of West Point's Class of 2002. Also with us, Drew Sloan, who was a graduate of that class at the United States Military Academy, and Jen Bryant, the widow of Todd Bryant, who was in that class as well. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. The nation paused today to mark the 7th anniversary of the September the 11th terrorist attacks. Remembrances were held at the World Trade Center site and in Pennsylvania. President Bush dedicated a memorial at the Pentagon. And lawmakers in Congress today promised greater scrutiny of the Interior Department's Minerals and Management Service, that after allegations of improper sex and drug use surfaced in a government report. That division of the Interior Department issues offshore drilling leases and collects oil royalties. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday, and guest host Joe Palca will be here. He'll talk about the unique dexterity of the human hand and the DNA behind it, plus a computer game based on evolution and a new research on the yeast we use for cool brewed lager beers. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. In just a moment, we'll talk about Cindy McCain, the woman who would be First Lady. But right now, we're continuing a conversation about the graduating class of West Point of 2002, the first class to graduate after 9/11. Our guests include Bill Murphy, Jr. He's the author of In a Time of War, The Proud and Perilous Journey of West Point's Class of 2002. Also with us, Jen Bryant, the widow of Todd Bryant, who was a member of that class, and Drew Sloan, also a member of West Point's Class of 2002. If you go to the website, inatimeofwar.com. There's a chapter of the book you can read. Also a video where you can meet many of the people that you'll read about in the book. But let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And why don't we go to Darren. Darren with us from Oklahoma City.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, Darren.
Hi, I was calling because I was kind of on the flip side of West Point during this time frame. I enlisted as an enlisted soldier in the military as a 19 Delta Cavalry Scout and reported for one station unit training at Fort Knox, Kentucky, August 15th, 2001. I was in week three of my basic training. We were actually qualifying with our rifles for basic rifle marksmanship, September 11th, 2001. Needless to say, the ensuing about 2.5 to 3 months of training were a little bit different from the beginning of the cycle.
I imagine people started shooting a little straighter.
Yeah, well, one of the main differences, Neil, was in the way that our drill sergeants addressed us. We sort of almost instantly went from being, you know, the civilian pukes trying to make the transition into soldierhood to being treated a little more seriously and more like soldiers, and our training was ramped up to a more serious level. I did deploy to Iraq in March of 04 with 1-7 Cav of 1st Cavalry Division from March 04 to March 05, and the very next year, my best friend, who was also 19 Delta, was killed in Iraq. I would say that the greatest impact that it's had on me is a lot like what you've had from some of your previous callers. Is it was almost a reassurance of my patriotism, and I got out and immediately enrolled in college. I'm currently a college student, and about a year left on my IRR contract, which is just the time frame in which you can be called back to service, I went ahead and re-enlisted into the reserves just to kind of take care of that last little year so that I can stay in school. And as soon as I complete school, I'm planning on returning to active duty.
Darren, first of all, I wanted to tell you how sorry we all are for your loss. I wanted to ask Drew Sloan. You were probably never met Darren, but I think you met a lot of people like him.
I did. And there's always, when you're sitting up in Harvard or anywhere back in the States, and you've been over to Afghanistan or Iraq, you have moments where you just remember, you know, all the people you served with over there who aren't coming back. I never knew Todd Bryant, but you know, I can picture what his memorial ceremony over there would have been. I was a general's aide for one of the American generals over in Iraq, and one of the things that he always did is he attended every single memorial ceremony for every single soldier who was killed over there. And so I, you know, saw one just about every day. And it's sobering, and it's sobering then, and it's still sobering today.
Neil,
yeah?
if I could just say one more thing before you let me go to Ms. Bryant. Mrs. Bryant, one thing that I say to anybody I know who's lost a loved one there, and the way I feel very strongly about my friend whom I lost the year after my deployment, is whether or not it's a good cause, whether or not we should be in Iraq, the one thing you can always know that your husband did sacrifice his life for was for the soldier to the left and the right of him. And guys like me who got to come home alive, every day that I get to live a good life here in the States, I'll make the most of it, and I'll never forget that gentlemen like your husband sacrificed their lives so that I could have that opportunity.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that very much, and I'm sorry for your loss as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. Let's get one last call. This is Kyle. Kyle's calling us from Hartford in Connecticut.
Hi. I just wanted to call, and I myself am a 2003 graduate of the United States Military Academy, as is my wife, actually. We both have done two tours in Iraq. I was with the 2-8 Cav. My wife was in the 1st Brigade in the headquarters there. And I wanted to express my thoughts that I think that West Point does an excellent job within the confines of being a college as well as a military training establishment of preparing the graduates to be platoon leaders. I was able to get a platoon shortly after graduating. I took my first platoon. Actually, they had been in combat already for a few months when I showed up. And anytime you take a new job in the military, there's some on-the-job training that happens. But
I especially imagine in that situation.
Yes. And I owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to my NCOs and my soldiers for the way that they helped me get my feet under me and hit the ground running. But the Academy did a tremendous job preparing me as well. Within my first week there, I know I was told a number of times that it was possible, and this was in 99, that my first platoon would be one that I would take in combat. And that's something that was stressed to me throughout my time there. I think they do a great job of preparing within the confines of being a college.
2003, your 5 years is just about up.
Actually, my wife and I just separated from active duty in June. And we're still in the reserves.
So you may go back yet?
It's possible. We hope not to, as we're trying to begin our lives as civilians. We've done two tours already, totaling 27 months each.
Kyle, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Before we leave, Jen Bryant, what are you doing now?
I'm actually teaching high school in Manassas, Virginia. I teach biology there, which keeps me very busy getting involved in the kids' lives and involved in the school.
I imagine that can be a tough job at times, too.
It can be, but it's very rewarding in its own right.
Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Also, our thanks to Drew Sloan, a graduate of West Point's class of 2002, with us from our bureau in New York. Drew, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, Neil.
And Bill Murphy, Jr. was also with us here in Studio 3A. His book is In a Time of War, The Proud and Perilous Journey of West Point's Class of 2002. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
We'll be back with the story of Cindy McCain in just a moment. Stay with us.